Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June Mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June Mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system.
I have been watching this pattern in a lot of my reading about Congress over the last 2 years. You see it in the write-up about John Boehner, where the leadership, there's movement among members of Congress, often bipartisan movement among members of Congress, and the leadership kills it.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance. Everyone, welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We're very excited that in our main segment today, we are going to be talking with the leaders of an effort to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia. Before that, we'll get into some news, just a few things going on in the world. It wasn't hard at all to decide what to talk about today. Oof, so much.
Before we get started, we wanted to share that we're about to record our bonus episodes for our patrons. If you're interested in becoming a patron of Pantsuit Politics for a small monthly donation, you will get an additional bonus episode. This month, the bonus episode on Pantsuit Politics is going to be an extended conversation of the dream and multi-level marketing for anybody who's listening along with that podcast. We did a little sneak peek on IGTV, and we're going to extend that conversation in the bonus episode. And then on the Nuance Lives bonus episode, we made a little editorial change. We're going to be talking about family units and individuals and different parenting styles where the individual is the primary concern and where the family unit is the primary concern. Not surprising anyone, I have some very strong thoughts about this. So that's what we're going to be talking about in both our bonus episodes if you're interested in becoming a patron of Pantsuit Politics or the Nuance Life.
we should start today, I think, with the Oval Office meeting between the Democratic Party leaders, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and the president.
I thought you were going to say Nancy Pelosi's coat. I'm also okay with starting there, if you'd like.
It was a beautiful coat.
And the dress was really cute, too. And at first I was like, I'm being so shallow, because that was the first thing I noticed and really loved. And then the internet seems to also be obsessed with the coat, so I feel much less shallow and good about my observation that she was rocking it with that coat and that dress. Just saying.
Well, here's my shallow observation about the meeting, since we're going to start there. Lots of pictures floating around of Mike Pence sitting silently in this meeting with his eyes closed. And my thought was, what a perfect visual representation of what many Republican Party leaders have been doing for the past 2 years. Just sitting with their eyes closed, hoping that it doesn't get worse.
Yep.
And failing to jump in and stop what is really a mess. And this meeting was really a mess. We have the important issue of whether we're going to keep the government open. And I have stressed a couple of times that Congress did some good work this year in actually passing budget resolutions. So we aren't in the dire situation that we sometimes are about funding the government. But we got an email from friend of the podcast, Middle East correspondent Gary Anderson, and she made the excellent point that it's almost worse because this shutdown would entirely put the burden on government employees.
Yep.
When the rest of the nation doesn't have a stake in it, the political theater of it is even worse.
Yep. The interesting visual representation, with particularly with regards to the shutdown, there's a picture, it was on the New York Times, where Nancy's like leaning forward, she's got her hands up, and Trump's kind of at her, Mike Pence is asleep or something. And Chuck Schumer has this Cheshire cat grin on his face. And I'm sure it is the moment that Donald Trump said, I'd be proud to shut down the government. You could almost hear him be like, okay, meeting's over. Everybody get that? Okay, we got that. All right, turn the cameras off. Let's go home. Like, you could feel like his all but glee at the president being willing to own, which is a terrible shutdown, which will be perceived terribly, which will put the burden on these government workers. You could just see his kind of like, you want to own it? Okay, great. I feel like he's even said at some moment like, Okay, good. We're all agreed. You own this one. Bye-bye, everybody.
There's been lots of analysis of this meeting. For me, the real story here is one of gender dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not new information in the fact that the president is not keen on details.
Word. That's such a kind way to put that.
That just saying something over and over again doesn't make it true. You know, like, the president was who he always is. But I thought the interesting part was Nancy Pelosi handling this conversation in an entirely different way than Chuck Schumer did. And the press coverage of it, given the entirely, I think, distinct ways the two of them behaved.
I immediately got on Instagram stories and was like, was this supposed to be a campaign commercial for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House? Because she went in there and I thought handled it so well. I mean, I feel like the A-plus star moment of the entire interaction was when she said, please don't categorize the strength I bring to this meeting. The presence of mind. I mean, she has a lot of practice. This woman has been doing this for a very long time. But even for someone who is so well-versed in the dynamics of Washington, to be able to go into a meeting with our president, who throws all of the rules of traditional Washington out of the window, which I know is what some people like about him. Look, she's shown that she can thrive under pressure, I think, with this whole leadership thing. The way she's handled this and has been, I think, a masterclass in political negotiations personally. And I just think it's been so well. And to go in there in the midst of all that and to handle that meeting and to be sort of caught off guard with the camera staying the way they did, I thought she handled herself amazingly well. I'm not really surprised in the difference in the way Schumer handled himself. I think Schumer sees, I'm not mad at him. I just think that he did what he always does, especially he thinks him and Trump have some sort of shared approach, shared buddy-buddy New Yorker thing, which maybe they do. And so I kind of wasn't surprised at the way he handled it differently, but I just thought she was a dang Zen master in that meeting.
I thought she was, too, and I was frustrated for her that Schumer interrupted her. He should have clearly seen that she had it.
Yeah.
Because she did, and she was calm, and she was, I thought, so credible in the meeting. Because, you know, Schumer was doing what Trump was doing in his way, right? Let me play to the cameras here. Let me be the more dominant force in this meeting. Let me make this all about politics. Nancy Pelosi was there to talk about a budget. Like, she stayed on message in such a disciplined way. I hated reading characterizations that the three of them were yelling at each other. She did not yell. She was incredibly measured, but totally strong. And as someone who has, you know, never been a huge Nancy Pelosi fan, I couldn't have been more impressed with how she handled herself in that meeting. And I feel like if you didn't see that distinction, this is a great moment to think about the interactions you have in business with women in your life. Because what Nancy Pelosi went through in that meeting is what women handle constantly in businesses and organizations. It was such a classic setup of how meetings feel for women, I think. And I just, bravo, Nancy Pelosi. Beautifully done.
I was thinking a lot about how I have traditionally felt about Nancy Pelosi. And I think the most generous description I can give is sort of neutral. I was happy that she was a female Speaker of House. I knew she was a powerhouse fundraiser. And I don't think that I ever fully grappled with how difficult that job is, how well she does it, because so much of any flap she has is what gets blown. Oh, well, we have to pass it so people can read it. That kind of crap. Like, that's what gets blown up and that's what comes to the press. And for her to have been, like I said, negotiating this leadership and then to go into that meeting and handle it the way she did, I am viewing her with fresh eyes. I think I'm seeing her successes and the way she negotiates a difficult power dynamic so incredibly well. And I think I'm just becoming, I have a new appreciation for her. And I keep thinking about a part of Rebecca Traister's book In Good and Mad, where she says that we sort of aggrandize and hero worship women, particularly when they don't have a lot of power. So we love Maxine Waters and we love Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But the reality is that neither of them, particularly when they're seeing this spike in their popularity, had a lot of power because they're in the minority. And so to see her not only succeeding and growing in popularity at the moment where she is gaining power as a woman in politics is really something to take a moment and recognize and appreciate.
That's so good. And I think the other thing that she's setting a model for that is applicable outside of politics, again, is transitional leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to say, without being defensive at all, yes, I am aging and someone else is going to need to do this job. And we need to recognize the importance of that. And also, I still bring a lot of value to the table. New folks bring value. I bring value. Let's all work together. Let's come up with a plan that we all agree to, and let's keep moving forward.
But I think what's so brilliant about how she's handled that whole transitional thing is she used it so expertly in this negotiation for power. It's not like she immediately came out, which I would have been my instinct to come out and say, I know, guys, I'm not going to be there forever. Of course, I'll limit myself. No, no, no. First, she came out and said, she just used the word transitional. And everybody was like, oh, and that picked some people off from her rebellion. And then when she couldn't, and then they kept saying, like, she might do this. And then when she couldn't quite get there, she said, okay, let's talk about the negotiation. And she said, I'll do it, because it's not really even true. They've set up this compromise in which they're term limited to 4 years in leadership that affects Clyburn and Steny Hoyer as well. She said, I'll do it even if it passes, because it's not 100% sure this thing that they've negotiated is even going to pass the caucus. I just think the way she's like kind of used that when she needed it to overcome a hump, to pick off a few more of the rebellion, I watch her in awe. I have watched her these last few weeks just in complete and total awe.
So I want to talk about a type of leadership that I'm not in awe of right now.
So many good examples right now.
Yes, which is what happened with the Farm Bill this week. I have strong feelings about the Farm Bill for many reasons, and we are going to go into detail about that on Tuesday. Today, I want to share that the Farm Bill passed, but barely, because Paul Ryan, and it really is fair to put this at Paul Ryan's feet from all of the reporting that I've read and just how this process works through the House Rules Committee. Paul Ryan inserted a provision into the Farm Bill that blocked a vote in the House of Representatives on Congress's powers in the War Powers Act to consider a resolution on Yemen.
Mm.
On Wednesday, the Senate started debate on the United States' role in the war in Yemen. And if you'll remember, we've talked about this a number of times. There's a civil war happening in Yemen. It has become a proxy for lots of conflict within the Middle East. And Saudi Arabia has claimed that it has a strong interest in the civil war in Yemen because of Iran's power. And everyone has behaved in an incredibly brutal way in this war. It has created a humanitarian crisis. People are starving. A school bus full of children was bombed earlier this year. And we focus in on that story because of the horrific details. But the truth is, civilians are dying every single day in Yemen at the hands of actors that have nothing to do with their country and its future in any kind of direct way that I think would feel meaningful to the civilians who are losing their lives every day. And so the United States is tangentially involved in this war. We've trained Saudi soldiers. We've provided equipment. We've made the bombs that are being dropped there. And because of the pretty clear evidence and confidence in which the CIA has expressed that Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, was integrally involved in the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, the Senate has been finally motivated to take up a measure that Mike Lee and Chris Murphy have been working on for over a year to say, we need to get out of Yemen. And Mitch McConnell opposed that measure ostensibly because he believes that it picks a fight with the executive branch over our power in the world that Yemen is not a good test case for. I think that it's true that whether we are at war within the meaning of the War Powers Act in Yemen is an interesting and important question. And I think it's true that if Congress can exercise its authority under the War Powers Act in Yemen, there are probably lots of places in the world that we're at war that require congressional authorization. And I am for that debate. I think that is a very important debate. I think we need to head on in a legal way talk about what it means to be at war here in 2018. But they don't want to do that right now. And so it looks to be poised to pass in the Senate, but it will not get a vote in the House this year if it does because of Paul Ryan's maneuver tucked into the farm bill, which is about agriculture and supplemental nutrition assistance programs. And I'm sick about it.
I have been watching this pattern in a lot of my reading about Congress over the last 2 years. You see it in the write-up about John Boehner, where the leadership, there's movement among members of Congress, often bipartisan movement among members of Congress, and the leadership kills it. You saw it in the Daily's reporting on the Criminal Justice Act. You see it when Barbara Lee finally gets bipartisan participation to move her revocation of war authorization out of committee. Leadership comes in and kills it without even talking to her or her Republican co-workers. And it is infuriating. I don't think it's Congress we're so mad at for being so polarized. Often, I think it's leadership who care more about their party caucus than the country. And it's disgusting. And I don't really know how to hold them responsible because I think it's such a insider baseball conversation, unfortunately. But that's what happens. They get together. That happened with the immigration bill. You had bipartisan support. You had all these members of Congress saying, we want to do something on immigration. What does the party do? They either delay it till it's dead or they kill it through parliamentarian maneuvers. And it's infuriating. It makes me so angry that Congress can't do its job because party leadership is too busy protecting their caucus and not doing what's right for the country.
Yeah, it's like party leadership believes that the leadership position is just to maintain the majority and nothing else.
Yep, yep.
For what? To what end? You know?
Yep. Oh, it makes me so mad.
Finally, before we talk about the Equal Rights Amendment, which I'm very excited about, I just wanted to get your thoughts, Sarah, on the Michael Cohen sentence. If you don't know, in the Southern District of New York, Michael Cohen has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for his role in facilitating payments to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. And I think an interesting bit of information to come out of that ordeal is Michael Cohen's reflection that working in the Trump Organization was like being part of a cult. And that he got caught up in that cult around Donald Trump and the paparazzi and the money and the celebrity of all of it, and that that was his real mistake.
I cannot imagine how anyone currently working for this administration or for Donald Trump could see Michael Cohen and what happened to him and think, why am I being loyal to a person who could destroy my life? Like, Michael Cohen made choices. Look, he's an adult man. But to me, you see this person who was so indelibly caught up in the web of Donald Trump and his businesses and his political pursuits, and how willing Donald Trump is to cut him loose, let his life be destroyed. And like, why, if you were working for him in any capacity, would you think, of course I'll be next? I don't even think he would come to his own children's defense, to be honest with you. He requires such loyalty and is completely unwilling to give it in exchange. I don't know. Even John Kelly, like, what did John Kelly just get out of that, honestly?
I think that we practice in many aspects of our lives watering down the meaning of everything. Mm. And so you get with a Trump-like figure at a much smaller level, right? Before there's any talk of him being the president. And you say, well, he's got some bad qualities, but he has some good ones too. And everybody's making a lot of money and it's kind of fun. And it's not that big of a deal. And then it becomes a bigger deal. And you still tell yourself, it's still not that big of a deal. And it's going well. And I don't really have a duty to speak out here. And even if I did speak out, it wouldn't do any good. It's going to roll along. So I might as well roll with it as long as I can. And I just think that we do this, and we do it in tiny ways to the point that I can see how Michael Cohen ended up where he ended up. I can see why Michael Cohen did the things that he did. It's not an excuse, and I think he should be held accountable. And I'm sorry for his family that he's going to be held accountable in a pretty dramatic way. But I get how he got there. I get how someone who knows Michael Cohen could say, this is a really good person who got caught up in a really bad situation. Because I think we're all surrounded by really good people who just think that what's happening is just happening, right? They're not active participants in it. And they could make a different choice, but what difference would that make anyway? And I think that it's just led to this super passive culture that we're living in the United States, and that Michael Cohen is just a really sad example of that.
One of the fundamental beliefs of my life is that you do not prevent yourself from being caught up in truly bad behavior by saying those people are bad and I'm not. You do that by saying, I could end up there too. How do I prevent that?
Yes.
I believe that so fundamentally. You know, I don't know if I just learned about the Milgram experiment, where the people in authority just said the experiment must continue and regular old people were shocking people or believed they were shocking people to great degrees of pain. And maybe I just learned about that at a young, impressionable age. And I thought, oh, yeah, well, I'll do it. So if we are all capable of that, how do I make sure that I have ideas and values and processes in place to prevent myself from falling trapped to that? Because I think what happens, particularly if you're a person like Michael Cohen, is it's like sunk cost, but not actual economic cost. It's like psychological cost. If I've already made this sacrifice and this compromise of my personal values, then I have to tell myself I did it for a really good reason, which is to protect this person or to make this money or to continue the growth of this organization or of this political candidate. If I've already done it and I know I did it for a really good reason, then, you know, the ends justify the means, and I have to continue to make those compromising choices so that every compromising choice I've made up until this point wasn't for nothing. You know, I think that's what happens. It's just this domino effect, and you just keep doing it and you keep doing it, because if you have to stop and acknowledge everything I've done up until this point was unethical and wrong, that's really, really difficult.
It's the moral version of sunk costs,
mm-hmm.
Right? I'm in this deep, and I've got to write it out.
Yep.
We were talking before we started recording. There's a high school not far from my house that has had 4 threats in a couple of days. And the last threat was from a student who admitted later that she just wanted a day off And it, you know, so she kind of hopped on Snapchat and did the thing that other people were doing. And so our social media pages are filled with screenshots from Snapchat and discussion about how great the police are doing and this whole movement to arm teachers and parents talking about how the parents of these kids should be arrested too. And there's just all of this conversation. And I feel like what's missing is, okay, what does this mean about what we're teaching our kids as parents? Mm-hmm. Because for kids using gun violence to facilitate any kind of objective for different kids means we have a cultural problem, and that is our responsibility. As adults in this community, that is our responsibility. But I think Michael Cohen is a great related example of how rare it is for anyone to say, this is really my responsibility.
Yep.
And my responsibility is not limited to my children and making a decision about whether I send my children to school today or not because I'm scared. My responsibility is much broader than that, and it is to care for people in a communal way. I think you talked about the formative experience in your life, Sarah. I think my formative experience has been hearing the story of my dad deciding to get out of banking because he was in banking at a time when he was having to repossess family farms. And it was legal and it was contractually appropriate, and there was nothing ethically wrong even with what he was doing, but he did not want to do that work. And it's helped me at many points throughout my career think, is this worth it or not? Even if it's the right business decision, is it worth it or not? And I just think if Michael Cohen had had that moment and that kind of example, he probably wouldn't have ended up where he is. And I want us to all be thinking more about that. I know that I have opportunities to do better in that way. And I know I have opportunities to teach my children better in that way.
Agreed.
Next up, we are going to talk with Katie Hornung about the campaign to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love. Chance encounters, a slow burn. Friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
All
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit.
We are very excited to be joined today by Katie Hornung, Emily Zimmerman, one of our listeners, who Sarah and I actually got to meet at an event in Virginia earlier this year, recommended that we have a conversation with Katie about an initiative that Emily is really heavily involved in, which is the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia. Katie, tell everybody a little bit about yourself before we jump into the campaign.
I am probably the least likely campaign coordinator I feel there ever was. By training, I have a CPA and I'm a software coder. But I'm a mom. I'm a homeschool mom. And one of my daughters was really geared up on correcting this historical oversight in our Constitution. And so I told her we could follow the issue and check it out a little, get involved. And one thing leads to another. And fast forward a couple of years, and suddenly the woman who'd been running the campaign for a couple of years here in Virginia, we call the women who've been doing this a long time, I call them the marathoners. And I'm more of a sprinter. And so in June, she said, "All right, Katie, you're the one in charge." And I said, "Oh, I was going to have a summer off with my kids." But it's been really great, wonderful learning experience. Definitely pulling on lots of different, you know, soft skills, hard skills, every skill we've got to get this campaign off the ground.
Tell people who don't know why this is a historical oversight, why it's been such a marathon. I was really surprised as I started doing some research in preparation for this conversation. And I think this has somehow gotten lost. And it's really important work that you're doing.
Can I just say, I'm a women's studies minor. My reaction shouldn't have been, "The ERA is still a thing? This is great." I should have known better.
Yeah, well, women weren't written into the Constitution back when it was written. And in fact, apparently Ben Franklin brought a number of Cherokee leaders to the Constitutional Convention. And their first comment when they walked in the room was, "Where are your women?" Mm-hmm. And we had Abigail Adams saying, you know, "Remember the ladies," but it is what it is. And that is just how it rolled out at the time. And when the 14th Amendment was written, it was not intended to include gender equality. And a lot of people who like to say we don't need the Equal Rights Amendment, they point to the 14th Amendment. However, if the 14th Amendment had included gender equality, we wouldn't have needed the 19th Amendment to give women the right to vote. We do have intermediate scrutiny under the 14th Amendment for gender discrimination cases, but the other, you know, race, religion, and country of origin discrimination all receive strict scrutiny under the 14th Amendment. So many people really focused on equality and just really wanting that to move forward for women and men alike. It's not in the Constitution. It never was in the Constitution. We actually have justices on both sides of the aisle. We have Justice Ginsburg saying, "I'd really like to open the Constitution and show my granddaughters right here where they're at." And then we also have Justice Scalia saying, you know, the Constitution does not say that you can't discriminate based on sex. So we have agreement from both sides of the justices. And, you know, we as a nation need to correct this historical oversight.
And if you're not a lawyer, the difference between intermediate and strict scrutiny might not be compelling in how it sounds. It's a very big difference. It can be outcome determinative in cases, mm-hmm. what level of scrutiny a court is applying in examining the ruling of a lower court. So just for all you non-lawyers out there, trust me when I tell you that that matters a lot.
Also, fun fact, nobody else is intermediate but us. So that's not frustrating at all.
Not at all. Yeah. So, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment, when it came out in the 70s, came out to the states and was, you know, passed with very quick succession by 35 of the states. And it wasn't getting to the 38 that it needed. And so they extended the deadline once, and they extended it from a 7-year deadline to a 10-year deadline. And that deadline came and went, and they hadn't finished off the 38 states. And so, you know, basically, I think a lot of very brokenhearted women just, you know, walked away. They needed to probably recover a little bit emotionally. And then they turned their sights to fixing through legislation to bring more equality to the table. So they really then at that point turned to, you know, we saw things like Title IX, and you saw, at least here in Virginia, in the early 80s, women prior to about 1983, if your husband was working and you were not working, you were simply a fiduciary agent on his account. It was his money. It was not a jointly held account. And so that didn't change here in Virginia till 1983. So, you know, the women who had been working on ERA shifted, pivoted, worked on legislation. And then along comes the 1990s, and we get the Madison Amendment added into the Constitution. And it's called the Madison Amendment because it was proposed by James Madison, and it took over 200 years to get fully ratified. And in 1990s, we added that as number 27 to our Constitution. And suddenly the women all said, well, wait a minute, 200 years ratification period. How about us? So the number of constitutional attorneys started taking a look at the issue again. And in 2016, you saw the American Bar Association pass a resolution encouraging every state bar to do whatever it takes to get the Equal Rights Amendment added into the Constitution. And in 2017, Nevada ratified. And in 2018, Illinois ratified, which leaves us one state short of what's called the three-state solution. And so Virginia is poised to be that state.
Well, I have to think that your prospects are incredibly good considering the amazing class of women you elected at the last election, who we've interviewed many on this show. So where are you at in the process in Virginia, and what do you feel like your prospects are?
So this past session was what's called a long session. And during our long session, which goes kind of January through March, we achieved a bipartisan majority in both the House and the Senate as co-patrons, not just a promise to vote for it, but true patronage of the resolution. Going into this next session, it'll be a short session. It's 45 days, starts on January 9th. And going into this next session, assuming we don't lose any support, we know we've gained some support in the interim. As long as we can get a vote on the full House and the full Senate floors, we should be able to be the 38th state to ratify.
Do you have a commitment to get it to the floor?
Well, I think right now, for sure, until the Republicans have caucused and had a significant decision and discussion together, they are not saying. I mean, we're hearing little rumors, but they have not said, yes, we're going to make sure it gets to the floor in this way. We haven't heard that. We've just mostly heard rumor at this point that things are looking favorable. The Wazin Center for Public Policy at the Christopher Newport University here in Virginia released polling stats on December 5th, and they were polling across all of the top issues for this next General Assembly legislative session. And polling at the top of the pile, at 81% support, was ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. And I think it's impressive. I mean, this is more my finance background, but I think it's impressive because it pulled ahead of a tax cut, which pulled at 75%, and it pulled ahead of Amazon moving headquarters here to Virginia, which pulled at 68%. So,
wow.
Equality is pulling ahead of economics. And I actually think that speaks to the human condition. You know, equality is one of our most basic held, like we all want to be respected and we all want to be treated equally. And that we hold that in higher esteem than almost anything else.
So the culture is in such a different place than the first time states were looking at ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. And one of the things that kept states from getting to that threshold for ratification was this movement from conservative women about concerns about the draft and all of the ways that this was sort of rethinking the role of women in society. I'm wondering if there are modern arguments that you're confronting with the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm specifically thinking of transgender issues. Like, what's the new conversation around the concerns about the ERA?
There's the conversation that they have freely, and then I think there are conversations in the background. And amongst the conversations that are held freely, they keep saying, deadline, deadline, deadline. Oh, we just can't do it. if you get below that layer, you'll hear the draft is actually still a very big one. You'll also hear the conflation of the issue with abortion, that, you know, the ERA is nothing but a vote for abortion, and therefore,
what?
Yep. And
so confused by that.
Well, we've taken a look at the opposition's kind of argument on that one, and they are significantly mischaracterizing some cases. So we've put a section on our website dedicated to kind of debunking the fake news, and out under background opposition, you could see all of the details that they're putting out there. It's a base level of fear mongering, I think, is really what's getting put out there. But we have, under the more amusing things we're hearing is it will cause toplessness all across America, that women will be topless.
right.
So, we're just hearing a lot of that is most of what we hear.
So what's the response? Talk us through the draft concern.
So on the draft in particular, back in the 70s, the comment would have been, oh, women will have to be in combat, or women can be drafted. You would have both pieces in play. And these days, women are in combat. They are serving on our front lines. And so the conversation around that is, number one, Congress has always had the authority to draft anybody. And at the end of World War II, just days before World War II ended, they were preparing a draft of women as nurses, because that's how they served in that era. So I don't think any of us should naively believe that women would not be drafted when we are serving in every location in the military. Mm. And in fact, the Pentagon, October of 2017, recommended that women begin signing up for the Selective Service. So, social progress happens whether or not we ratify the Equal Rights Amendment.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we talked about this as a partisan issue a little bit. You have done a bus tour of Virginia on a bipartisan basis. I know that Delegate Jennifer Carroll Foy, who is someone we've interviewed on the show and think a lot of, was part of that. But you have a Republican senator involved in this campaign as well. Can you talk about how you secured that bipartisan support and what's the case that he's making to his colleagues and constituents?
So last session in our Senate, we have 40 senators, and last session we had support from 4 out of the 21 Republicans. And when everything was kind of going down in flames in the Rules Committee last session, there was conversation between 2 of the senators, and I think the Democrat who was carrying it at the time kind of looked over at our new chief patron for this next session, and somehow conversation between the 2 of them, that's where that came to be. And he happens to be my senator. I happen to be lucky enough to be represented by somebody who's going to take a strong stand for equality. And I certainly appreciate that with my daughters. We have worked very hard to make sure that we are an aggressively nonpartisan campaign, that equality is for everyone. We as a country cannot afford for equality to be something that one party wants and not the other party. We need everybody always working for equality. So that's one of my big taglines. Equality is for everyone. We should all be working for equality. So, and we call it nonpartisan because, you know, we frequently get into this back and forth between Democrats and Republicans and everything's bipartisan or whatever. We really, you know, we have people who identify as Green Party. We have people who identify as libertarians, and equality is for everybody. So we call it an aggressively nonpartisan campaign for that reason.
So let's say that Virginia ratifies, then what happens?
Our attorney general, I believe, would notify the archivist that we had ratified. And at that point, it will be up to the archivist whether or not an action is taken there. And no matter what happens, I would personally predict plenty of lawyers.
I would imagine that a significant challenge in this campaign is that there are so many very specific legal issues. So how did the bus tour go, and how are your outreach efforts going with people who get lost in some of the language around this?
You know, we have a lot of information on our website, and we've tried to make it just constituent friendly. Not everybody is a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. We've tried to really boil down the legal talking points into understandable bullet points. And so we have a whole FAQ section dedicated to most of the frequently asked questions, whether it's about a rescission or a deadline or a toplessness or whatever the issue. Transgender is actually one of our FAQs. So we have tried to address every typical comment or question we're hearing, whether it's from a legislator or from just a Virginian, making sure that all those talking points are out there. We're not trying to hold anything back. Our website is completely dedicated to empowering all of Virginia to get educated on every piece, you know, that they have an interest in getting educated on. We, for the legislators, we have a kind of the next step up that includes case citations and such. That is being vetted currently and will be handed over to our chief patrons in the next couple of weeks.
So what can our listeners do if they want to support your efforts or learn more about what you're doing?
So our website is chock full of information, and that's varatifyera.org. Right now, we have a petition. We are aiming at 20,000 signatures to be delivered by January 9th. And so we encourage anybody and everybody to send this to all of your friends in Virginia or sign it, friends, neighbors, if you happen to live in Virginia. And that's varatifyera.org/petition. And so those are kind of our two big entrance points on the petition. There is an option to opt in to a newsletter. We send it out about once a week. Once General Assembly comes around, we'll start sending it out daily, just because I think things are going to move very fast with a 45-day session.
Well, Katie, thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for spending time here with us. And I hope that you hear from lots of our listeners and build even more good momentum and energy around this effort.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, all of you, for joining us for another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We will be back in your ears on Tuesday talking about the budget and bills that Congress has to pass before the government shuts down. And until then, keep it nuanced, y'all.
Dylan Garvin produces Pantsuit Politics every week, and thanks for making us sound better and smarter, Dylan.
Elise Knapp is our production assistant, which means we could not live without her scheduling, organization, feedback, and creativity. Thank you so much, Elise.
We couldn't make Pantsuit Politics without support from our listeners. Go to patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics to learn how you can receive more nuance and help make the show better.
Special thanks to our executive producers who have committed to supporting us in a major life-giving way. Tracy Putoff, Tim Miller, Cherry Haas, Sarah's husband Nicholas Holland, and my husband Chad Silvers.
Learn more about our live events that we're involved in and what we're reading each week by signing up for our weekly newsletter at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.
And connect with us and members of the Pantsuit Politics community by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.